LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com.
All right, everyone, here we go. Let's build that energy. Reverend James, hit the music.
Welcome to Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, exploring the magical world around us only on the LMC Radio Network. There are so many fantastic, exciting, and curious things that make up this world we share. Come join us as we explore the spiritual, magical, and wondrous phenomena that enrich our souls and bring color to our days. I am your announcer, Reverend James of FolkConjure.com, located in Western North Carolina. This week, we welcome our special guest, the vibrant Doc Murphy of RootDocMurphy.com in the Twin Cities of Paganistan. Tonight, it's PhD versus CPU as we present Doc Murphy versus the occult AI. In just a moment, we'll be joined by our host, Reverend Art of FolkConjure.com in North Carolina, and our guest, Doc Murphy. Make sure you're logged into Blog Talk Radio and join in the discussion via the chat. Now, let's catch up with our host. Reverend Art, take it away.
Thank you, Reverend James, and welcome everyone yet again to Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places. If it's Monday, you know we're on the air, and also it is Magic Mondays on Hoodoo Psychic's Facebook page. Take a few moments, drop on over to the Hoodoo Psychic's Facebook page, look for the Magic Mondays post, drop a comment on, and get entered to win your chance of a free 15-minute reading with the Hoodoo Psychic of your choice. There's a bunch of us on Hoodoo Psychics, Reverend James, myself, Doc Murphy, Heidi Holton, our good friend JD, Miss Kat from Lucky Mojo Curio Company, all willing and ready to take your calls. All right, so hope everybody's doing fantastic on this extremely cold night here in the North Carolina mountains. It's like somebody literally tried to just turn the heat off. But as we do, we will power through. But before we get going too far in, let's jump back over to you, Reverend James. How are things upstairs?
I was about to say here. Things are going pretty good. We have finished the pouring a prototype of each one of our new figural candles, which totals around 40 figural candles. Those will be going up on Etsy on our website very soon. And this may not mean a lot to everyone, but those of you that know me know that I do Chinese astrology, and there are two main people in that field that have a corner on certain calculations that have been quote-unquote hidden in the ancient texts, and I've been trying very, very hard to learn where these things are, and I have found how to plot the 28 constellations on a Qi Min Dun Jia chart, which is very exciting. Now I just need to figure out a way to do it with a computer so that it doesn't take as long. Beyond that, I have been setting up and getting ready for this AI versus the PhD, and so we'll have to see how this works out.
Yeah, I know with your exacting nature and your tech skills, it won't take very long to get that that whole process systematized. We'll use some SAT level words tonight. But yeah, I'm really excited about myself. It's been what, 4 weeks of fine tuning and, you know, melting and pouring and cooling and fixing and checking and, you know, learning how to use a candy thermometer without breaking it to get these candles up and running. Can't wait to share those with you. You know, one of the things with Folk Conjure and Folk Faith Ministries is, you know, we really do try to do everything as much as humanly possible by hand. Most of the stuff that we provide to our clients, you know, it's all handmade. We are hand pouring the candles. We make incense and all kinds of other things. Just, and we also are very much into repurposing, you know, so it's not uncommon for us to be shipping out an Amazon box, you know, reduce, reuse, recycle. That is huge with us. But that's enough about us. I am thrilled beyond measure to have our good friend, Doc Murphy, back with us in the studio tonight. I'm sure this show tonight is going to be a hoot nanny. And I really can't wait to get into it. But how are things up there in the, I'm sure, much, much colder than I'm complaining about, north? How's things with you, Doc Murphy?
Oh, it's cold all right, because it's Minnesota. But I am warm and toasty in my apartment, as I have been all day. So we know how to do cold here. We know how to insulate ourselves. yeah, it was a high of 16 degrees today. We still have not. Ooh. We had a dusting of snow yesterday, but it didn't stick around. Weirdly enough, it went away. I don't know how it melted. It was too cold. So weirdly, we haven't, usually we're pummeled with snow by now. Usually that's, you know, so we're definitely getting the snapping cold, temperatures up here in Minnesota, but we haven't gotten the snow that sticks yet. So we will see about that. It's a matter of time. We'll be shoveling pretty soon. So,
you know, being a Southern transplant, I do know sometimes it just gets too cold to actually snow, but
yeah.
y'all do snow right. I'll tell you that.
You know, there are some that get snow right. There's still some that, you know, there used to be a point of pride that if you learned how to, drive in Minnesota, you know, you can pretty much drive anywhere because, you know, when they take them out at 16 to get their driver's license, they teach them how to slide into skids and avoid snow drifts and all these other things. And it seems that that's just kind of gone by the wayside because they're just as crappy a driver here in the Twin Cities as anywhere. Weirdly enough, some of the best drivers in Minnesota are the immigrant Somali cab drivers here in the Twin Cities. They have nailed it. They have adapted very quickly. So anyway. I'm doing okay. I had a little bit of a cold this weekend, so I'm mostly fine. I just am a little bit stuffy. So if you hear me kind of snip, 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 that's just me, the last little bit of this. And it's getting to be, you know, holiday season again of a different kind for Hay River Fire Haven. Yule is coming up, and Yule is our winter holiday from which Christmas emerged. We'll do a little bit more about that sometime. But we have, rather than being crazy and camping out in weather like this at Firehaven, we have a slumber party planned. And we are designing and working with women who have reached their 50s, women who have reached the time of menopause and the change. And we're going to be doing a spiritual series for those of us that are doing that. And we're going to, it's a trial. We're going to see what it is that we can design. And if it turns out to be really meaningful and lovely and successful, then we'll have a prototype that we can share with other groups that are looking to honor that particular cycle too. It's not the same as croning. That's something that we did have a talk about, is that we do have a kind of a cultural pattern. A lot of times in paganism, especially with women, the maiden, the mother, and the crone, that these are these three important roles of kind of emerging womanhood, where your maiden phase is when you are kind of young and you're striving and you're figuring things out. Your mothering phase is, you know, without necessarily becoming a biological mother, it's sort of your the time when you kind of take in and you nurture and you kind of oversee your life and your household, and the crone is the wisdom keeper. And we all agreed that there's another spot there in between mothering and croning that definitely needs spiritual honoring. So we're giving that a shot, and we'll let you know how that goes.
I can't wait for that update. And speaking of updates, how are things going with camp?
Oh, my goodness. You know, it's funny. I was with, spent Thanksgiving with old friends, one of whom was a very generous donor that helped us to get the 501c3 fees paid. And he very simply said, so, how's that grant going? Because we received one in September, largely to focus on more archiving material at the kind of the wheelhouse of my research partner. And I dropped her a text saying, folks are asking, how's it going? And haven't heard a thing, which is a combination, I think, of holidays, and she's probably that kind of busy. so I'm taking it as a sign that she is happily up to her elbows in archival material and is happier than a pig in slop. And we are going to hear in December about the other grant proposal we turned in, which will be about more oral histories. We did find out that we are presenting on camp at Paganicon. And Paganicon is the big yearly event that Twin Cities Pagan Pride puts on. It's going to be March 15th to 17th in Plymouth, Minnesota. It's a con. It's a hotel event. And we take over a hotel with rituals and workshops and art and vendors and presentations and hospitality suites and just community. This is a big community, and we have some really impressive guests this year. And Velvet, my research partner, and I put forward to do an update on camp. We're going to be presenting Friday, and we're going to have a good big chunks of material and can answer more questions, because now that we're own 501c3, we really can just kind of plug along and beg people for donations, you know.
You know, just to kind of refresh everybody's memory, Doc Murphy is part of a project lovingly known as CAMP that I can't remember exactly what it stands for. However, they are tasked with archiving and collecting pagan information, relics, documents, et cetera, from wherever they can get their hot little hands on it. And probably, you know, in recent years, I'd have to say one of the most exciting and kind of worthwhile projects that I've heard come out. And I do know that they're asking for URLs and phone numbers in the chat. I do believe these are still in processing, right, Doc Murphy?
Yes, still in processing. We're rustling tech-savvy volunteers to help with that. There's email addresses, so if you want to reach out to somebody to discuss issues around camp, you can email If there's any of us on the board here, I'm trying to think of who you would reach out to. I'll put it in the chat later. I have a computer and a phone open here, and I'm trying to multitask. But it'll be, for example, it'll be MPIZZA. That's my name. At paganarchive.org. Like I said, I'll drop in the chat the actual address of our board, and so if you have questions or your conversation about it, things like a website and a presence and that sort of thing, we're still working on. This is the hardest part because we're all like bookie nerds, and we've got very skilled planners and very skilled bookie nerds and very skilled scholars and very skilled money people. We're not big on the technician part yet, so.
You know,
thank you, Troll. Thank you for Troll for putting that in there.
I might know somebody that possibly could help out a little bit with that. James.
we got a volunteer from Nagashiva too. Okay, well, we could definitely be in touch with you folks. Oh, by the way, before I forget, CAMP, C-A-M-P, stands for the Cultural Archive of Modern Paganism. And the project itself is intended to be a digital archive of contemporary paganism throughout the country. We're starting in Minnesota because it's where we're at, and we're working with the Minnesota Historical Society specifically on our community. But the intent is to get digitized and get a website up, an interactive digital archive, so that any community that is going to collect oral histories, documents, data, media, whatever it is, this is going to be a place, a repository, an archival repository, where the history of our community's movement will be held. So that's what we're doing. And thankfully, we've been successful, and we're plugging along. Like I said, we're just starting in Minnesota because this is where we are. The point is that as there's more interest from state to state, and folks doing their own archiving work, you reach out to us. We can help train. We can give you tips on what applying for grants is like. Become friends with the scholars in your communities, because you're going to need people that have archival training and PhDs if you're going to do this. It's not an afternoon hobby thing. You really they're going to want, like, you know, people who know what they're doing. So, but we're going to help out with that. So we're talking with a lot of folks in Wisconsin right now who are just a state over. And of course they want to get started with this too. And so we're like, okay, well, you know, you got to go to the Wisconsin Historical Society, and their faces kind of fall. And it's like, no, you have to work with your own state. You can't come over here to Minnesota. If you're in Wisconsin, they said, but you can, as part of your grant proposal, propose that you need to hire us as a consultant to train you in oral history techniques and train you in archiving techniques. And, you know, so it's a complex thing that, like I said, the language of this is what my research partners speak. But that's the point, is that this is going to be a national digital archive. And we had a year to kind of get our bearings, because we had a combination of moving away from working with a different 501c3. And then, as a lot of you know, I had eye surgery. And during all that time, my research partner got the 501c3 started. We got a board put together, and now we're cooking. So here we go.
Yeah, this is it's all phenomenal, and I know the amount of work that's gone into it, and I mean, it's a labor of love that I've been excited to watch it. I've been excited to hear about it. Looking forward to hopefully participating in it. You know, Reverend James and I, being down here in the Appalachian region, may have some, you know, unique insights and such to toss in as well. And hopefully,
wonderful,
we will be able to join you in March for Paganicon. That's kind of my goal for the first quarter of next year. And Reverend James is sitting upstairs right now going, he never told me that. So
get your hotel room now, man. Get your hotel rooms reserved now because they get filled. But like, yeah, we'll show you a good time. And oh, it's Pagana Con is huge. It's a national event that we just happen to host in the Twin Cities here. And the guest list alone is worth the price of admission. I am just seriously impressed with who they have as keynote speakers this time. And you're going to meet the folks in Paganistan. So, but yeah, things book up pretty quick. So if you want to do this, get your hotel room now.
So noted. So many fantastic things. This is the energy that you bring every time that you come to the show is fantastic. And, you know, if we with Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, Folk Conjure, or Folk Faith Ministries can help, you know, get the word out there about camp and such and all of these just wonderful things, just let me know. And we will be off and running.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate the support. I appreciate the interest. And as long as we keep talking about it, you know, more people will know about it. So I do have the thumbs up. Eventually, we'll sit my research partner, Velvet Capone, down to also talk about camp. We're probably going to wait until the holidays roll over because bananas right now. But that's coming. And like I said, if nothing else, there could be an episode of Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places on location at Paganicon. And we can certainly help out with that.
That would be beyond phenomenal.
It'd be a lot of fun. It would be a lot of fun.
I can only think of the unique editing that show might take. Anyway, all right. All right. You know, I want to make sure that we have enough time to dive into the show for tonight. So I think this is going to be a perfect time for us to take a pause, take some messages from our sponsors, and we'll be right back with Doc Murphy versus the Occult AI.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurement, Sundays 3 to 4:30. Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and Reverend James, Mondays 4 to 5:30. The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, in syndication, Tuesdays. The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Deborah Voigt, Tuesdays 4 to 5. The Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield, in syndication, Wednesdays. And The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Miss Phoenix LaFay, in syndication, Thursdays. All time specific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
Support for this program is provided by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and located online at luckymojo.com. And by the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic conjure practitioners located online at readersandrootworkers.org. And by Hoodoo Psychics, the first psychic line run entirely by Hoodoo practitioners. Receive a reading with a trusted rootworker instantly. Call 1-888-4-HOODOO or visit hoodoopsychics.com. And by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of the Association of Independent Spiritual Churches located online at crystalsilenceleague.org. Thank you to all of our sponsors. Back to you, Reverend Art.
Thank you yet again, Reverend James. And I've been debating on doing this for several weeks now, ever since the bots kind of killed us the first time we tried to present this show. But I have to do it. It's let's get ready to rumble. All right. Now that I got that out of my system, definitely can't wait for this show today. You know, I'm going to turn this over to you, Reverend James, here in a moment to kind of lead us in a little bit, because Reverend James speaks tech. Reverend Art breaks tech. That's kind of how that works. But actually, before we jump too far in, we had a question that I think will kind of guide us into this conversation very, very nicely from Balkan Diviner. He writes, all right, so I already have the first question. How does Doc Murphy envision the future? Is there a particular piece of media she thinks about? He says, I always look up to Detroit Become Human Again, a wonderful game, as a point of reference. And he means the future in regard to AI.
Oh, gosh. You know, I, in a weird way, I'm kind of, apropos of the show, kind of the wrong person to ask about that. You know, I just retired from higher ed, where AI is starting to take over not only knowledge acquisition, but also, you know, this is what students are using to try to write their papers with. And fighting against that in order to get students to understand that cultivating the skill of critical thinking, research, you know, competent writing, these are all necessary skills to be, you know, a functioning, you know, citizen, not just a, you know, a brainiac in a corporation or something. But as long as we have still have the mindset going that education is task-based rather than kind of knowledge-based, you know, it goes in waves like that. It's going to be a little bit of an awkward struggle for a while. I used to work at an art and design school, and boy, they are freaking out about AI and what that means for professional artists. And I'm kind of glad I walked away from all that, because I don't want to have that conversation. in a strange way, I think, technologically speaking, with regard to the occult, I don't think it's going to be so much that digital and more contemporary tech is going to take the place of creating spiritual practices. I think that the primary reason people engage in spirituality is because they want to be, you know, they want to truly experience a life fully lived. And while digital tools are really remarkable and wonderful for, you know, tasks and communication. I mean, I work for a digital nonprofit. You know, we are helping people who don't have access or can't afford access to basic things like computers and internet. We make sure that they're able to have them. They're necessary. They're about as, you know, as necessary for communication, they're necessary for education, and they're miraculous. I think any of us that got through the pandemic, you know, even though we talk about how sick we all are, but it was a miracle to have something like Zoom, right? We
right.
could stay in touch with people. So I think of those communication types, and I think the sharing of information. I think occultists and magicians and pagans are naturally very, very knowledge hungry and love to research it and find it. Some of the first early adopters of things like bulletin boards and chats and websites were in the occult and pagan community. They wanted to sit down and figure out how to use this tool. So I think anything that's going to kind of open up the sorts of realms of research and study and communication are always going to be prized and valuable. But with regard to the actual spiritual relationships and ritual and the things that get us going, I don't think there's ever going to be a replacement for, you know, human interaction and human, you know, putting the tech down for a bit. And that's just me, but there'll be others I think that'll disagree.
Very good. Very good. You know, I've personally, my outlook on technology, and Reverend James can attest to my skepticism and or outright rejection of advancing technologically with different things. You know, honestly, for me, it started with reading Fahrenheit 451 way back in the day. If anybody hasn't read this book, it freaked me the hell out. It was an assigned book in my 10th grade class, wrote a paper on it, and actually continued to refine that paper over several courses afterwards. You know, it talks about how you know, the digitization of the future, but removing education and art and literature and things from the people, more or less keeping them ignorant. And in the book, you know, firefighters aren't what we call them today. You know, firefighters today go around putting out fires. In the book of this, in the future of this book, the firefighters go around and set fires and burn down people's houses if they suspect those people are hiding a book. You know, so the whole AI thing totally, you know, when people started going to MP3s and everything else, I'm like, nope, I will keep my CDs, digital books, ebooks. No, I will build a library. You know, it's like the Noah's Ark of archaic forms of media here in the house. But yeah, and well, people are mentioning in the chat about 1984, Brave New World, you know, things.
Yeah, and you know, my thought about that is the while the medium itself is not the issue. Like I said, it's wonderful that we have ways to preserve things digitally. When I was doing my dissertation study, you know, I was going to the Duveen collection and looking at alchemy books from, you know, the 1500s, and they're amazing and they're gorgeous in public, but in order to make sure that they'll stay preserved, they have to stay in the fridge. So they were just then, as I was in grad school, starting to digitize all those beautiful illustrations in those alchemy books. And now they're everywhere. Now you can get, you know, Robert Flood's, you know, illustrations and Paracelsus's work, you know, printed on T-shirts and tote bags now. I mean, it's totally cool. But there's always that kind of gatekeeping, and sometimes it's subtle gatekeeping. You know, there's always going to be somebody making the decision of, well, this should be preserved and this should be digitized. I don't know about that. It's sort of like the record bin at the record store. You know, somebody decides that these need to be put on the CD and the other ones just need to be put in the dollar bin. And then you lose the digital record. You lose the record of that music, and you know. So there's always that to be wary of, which is, you know, definitely what Fahrenheit 451 addresses. But any of these where there's going to be somebody along the line that decides something is not worth preserving if we're not careful about how we use the technology. And I kind of want to address Nagashiva said in the chat, I've noticed that many things billed as AI are unintelligent, and I've been disappointed. And that's just it. It's wrongly named. These ChatGPT things and these other things that seem to compile text and information quickly are not intelligence. They can't do anything unless they're told. They can't create. They can't generate new thought. They're aggregators, and what they do is they scatter around, kind trying to find people's pre-made information to try to put it together in one place. So yeah, it's wrongly called artificial intelligence. And
Doc Murphy takes the first swing.
Take that! You ain't smart at all, artificial intelligence. Marilla, and again, you could get into another wormhole about defining what intelligence actually is. But you know, I mean, a lot of us agree that intelligence has to do with being able to have original thought and being able to create and to be able to, analyze and do multiple things with ideas, you know. And digital tech is really good at doing tasks very well and very quickly, but it only does what it's told. There you go.
Very true. So, Reverend James, why don't you introduce everybody to the occult AI?
Okay, well, I'll do my best. The occult AI that Doc Murphy has pointed us to, we actually have a running version of it on a cloud computer. It is called Mistral Trismegistus 7B. All right.
I'm sorry. I love it already. Let's do it.
Right. So what this is it just like Doc Murphy was saying, this is a piece of software that has been fed specific information, in this case, occult information.
You popped out there, James. You want to try again?
Oh, where did you lose me?
When you started to explain what it was.
Go figure. They're after me.
They're after you.
Okay. So it is a bunch of equations, algorithms. It's a software that is uses a set of data that it is fed, in this case, occult information, which ironically enough, in this specific case for this model that we're using, it was based off of occult information that was created off of ChatGPT-4. So it is AI teaching AI. and that will become very apparent in just a moment whenever I noticed in the chat, Troll T said, I would like for the AI to introduce itself and to show us and to tell us its credentials. So I figured, why not? Let's put in the prompt, introduce yourself and your abilities in 200 characters. And this will be very quick. It spit out 200 characters in about two paragraphs, but it starts out, I am a professional, experienced, and versatile freelance writer who specializes in creating engaging and unique content that captivates readers and achieves its objectives. Now I'm going to skip forward to the next paragraph because this is where you know it goes a little crazy. My most recent accomplishments is authoring a comprehensive guide to online marketing for small businesses. How interesting for an occult AI. So basically what that's saying is that it kind of took some information from where I wrote, introduce yourself and your abilities in 200 characters, and may have found, for instance, an application that someone had uploaded that where this is a question, introduce yourself, and then they wrote literally these things, and this is what it put together out of all of that. So there's different settings because it is software, and I kind of just want to go over those settings for everybody just so that everybody understands exactly – well, not exactly what's happening because it's very complicated, but as best to understand as possible. So we have a prompt in a prompt box where we can put in our question. Mm-hmm. We have a max new tokens integer, which is how many characters that – it will generate from the prompt that we provide. We currently have it set at 200. We may change that a little bit throughout the show. There is also a temperature number, and the temperature number is a parameter that influences the randomness of the output. So if we set a low number, the model becomes more deterministic and is likely to choose from the most probable next word. If we set a high one, it becomes more creative and exploratory, generating more diverse but potentially less coherent text. The next thing that we have is the top P number, which is nucleus filtering. That may not mean anything to anybody, but the definition of that is it's a way to control the diversity of generated text in natural language processing models. So what that means is if you imagine that you have a bag of words and each with its own certain probability, the top P filtering means that you only consider words with the cumulative probability reaches a certain threshold, and that threshold is the number that we set. So the more probable that word will be, it has a higher number, then that number, then the higher we set it, that's where it kind of cuts off on what words it chooses. So you're only using a subset of the most probable words. The next thing that we have is the top T filtering number. It is another way to control the diversity of the generated text by considering only the top K most probable tokens. And what that means is similar to the top P, but instead of considering a cumulative probability threshold, the top K directly limits the number of tokens it considers. So it shortens that bag of words that we're choosing from. And the last but not least, we have the presence penalty. And the presence penalty is a penalty applied to the likelihood of a certain token being presented in the generated output. So what that kind of means is where there's a presence penalty, the model is discouraged from generating specific tokens. It could be used to bias the model against certain words or types of words. So, for instance, if you want to generate a sentence without a certain word, you can apply a presence penalty to that word, making it less likely to be chosen by that model. So I know that's a lot to take in, but that's kind of the ins and outs of this specific model and kind of gives you an idea of what goes into the generation of the text that it provides.
All right. Well, you don't need any tokens with me, so let's do this.
I'm going to leave this to the two of you because I'm sure this is going to be absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
And we already have
a
long list of possible questions.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I think I remember saying this right before we hit the air was probably with questions like who was Paracelsus? Or what is magic? Or those there's actually probably a lot of information that it can aggregate, and probably a lot of good historical information in some cases that it can aggregate. So that we might find it's pretty good at. But the more comparative or idiomatic or allegorical sorts of approaches, that might be entertaining to watch AI do. But there you go. We can try anything. Let's just do it.
So do we want to start with one of those first two questions you offered, Doc Murphy? Do you want to pick one of those and we can have it generating while we pick a few other questions to come next?
Okay. I'm going to just go ahead and, because we've addressed it before in another show, but I'm just going to take Troll's question. How does magic work?
Great. I will put that in.
Okay. You want AI to answer first or me to take a crack at it?
It usually takes a minute because that's another thing that people need to understand. These things are not very fast, which is kind of a little bit ironic. Doc Murphy will probably be able to spit out something a lot faster than what this thing's going to be able to spit out and probably a lot more clearer. So, Doc Murphy, I will let you have it, and then we'll see what Trismegistus has to say.
Okay. I'm still cracking up that that's its name. Well, magic is the art and practice of manipulating the subtle vital energies of the world we're in and ourselves and living beings upon it to enact change and to enact, results in the world. It's a practice of manipulation and experiencing and sharing subtle energies that manifest in all sorts of different ways through living beings. There are all sorts of cultural, religious explanations for why this is necessary, but on the basic level, there is an understanding in each of those cultures that there are unseen forces that are apprehendable and can be known, and they can be utilized and used to make things happen, sometimes in a religious context and sometimes not. Poof.
And has Elemagmagicadosis answered yet? I can't see that name.
It's still trying its best to generate 200 characters, so we still have a few moments.
Okay. Well, I'll be merciful. We can just kind of wait for it to generate. And like I said, we did an entire first show together where we talked about what magic is. So that was a bit of an easy one.
It has answered.
Okay.
All
I'll hear it.
So, dun, dun, dun. How does magic work? The answer to this question is both simple and complex. It's simple because the process is reduced to a formula. Intention plus energy plus symbol equals magic. But it's complex because understanding the intricacies of intention, energy, and symbols require a deep exploration of human psychology, metaphysics, and semantics. Intention is the driving force behind magic. It's the mental image of your desired outcome that fuels the transformative power of magic. When you formulate your intention, it's essential to be clear and focused. The more precise your intention, the stronger your magical result will be. Energy is the catalyst for change in the magical process. It's the raw material that empowers your intention and gives it life. There are various forms of energy, such as emotional energy, mental energy, spiritual energy, or physical energy. The key is to harness dot, dot, dot. That is 200 characters.
Wow. Okay. Well, first off, if that was an essay written by one of my students, I would have gotten my red pen out and sliced the whole thing off. So a little too much wordage. Not bad, but the equation thing of intent plus image plus symbol, that's picked right out of Malinowski. And I mean, the minute I heard that equation, it was like, yep, that someone pulled that out of theoretical anthropology about magic. Just, I was able to nail that. And the rest of the description of the use of magic and how it works is framed through writings about Western style magic, and more kind of contemporary takes on it. So it's not inaccurate, but it is, I'd say, lacking in cultural depth. And like I said, it just picked, it kind of jumped from theoretical anthropology to describing one particular cultural method. So not bad,
I do want to say that I didn't see that there was a scroll bar. There was a little bit left. The last sentence, still not complete, says, the key is to harness and direct the right type of energy to align with dot, 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 which I'm assuming would be your intention.
Your intent. Mm-hmm. Not bad. I like I said, I'm hung up on the don't touch Malinowski, but that's just me. So, okay, I'll say this one's a draw. We'll go back to our corners. You get a drink of water here. And
round one complete.
Mm-hmm.
So, do we have a question two?
Well, there's definitely a list in the chat.
I just saw, will occult AI be evaluating Doc's responses also? Hell no.
I don't think it could, to be honest.
I don't think it could, yeah. See, I'm scrolling up here to look at the questions that are in the chat here. Something really chunky.
I like
chunky. Okay, who is Paracelsus and how does this relate to witchcraft? That's nice and comparative. Let's give that one a try.
All right, typing in.
Okay. I'll start then. Paracelsus is considered the father of modern chemistry, was also one of the really important historical figures of alchemy. Paracelsus also was not the creator of the doctrine of signatures, but he was the first one to kind of, you know, compile it and present it at class at a university. And the doctrine of signatures is the magical explanation and the magical theory that all living things demonstrate what their magical power is and what their properties are magically, by how they look, by how they behave, by how they present themselves to you. They basically tell you through their signature what it is that they do. It's different than their medicinal qualities, where, you know, if you ingest white willow bark, your headache will go away. This is more by observing what they do and how they look that gives you an answer to how it is that they will behave. This can move into medicinal qualities, but this is about magical use and metaphysical use. How does this relate to witchcraft? Well, most of the spell work that at least European witchcraft does has its roots in the Doctrine of Signatures. Western correspondence theory and ceremonial magic has its roots in the Doctrine of Signatures and the work of Paracelsus and in his alchemical work. There's definitely both a folk religion and folk magic branch that has come off of the work that Paracelsus did, specifically with the Doctrine of Signatures and spell work. And you can definitely trace through the work of Paracelsus and his work in alchemy the roots toward Western-style magic, correspondence theory, and ceremonial magic, Western-style magics. And I'll leave it at that. I think it was about 200 characters.
All right. So this one actually spit out rather quickly, so I'm not sure if we finally got the machine woke up and it's churning it out now, or if it just already had this in its back pocket. But we prompted the question, who is Paracelsus and how does he relate to witchcraft? And it answers, Paracelsus, 1493 to 1541, was a Swiss physician, alchemist, and astrologer. He was a contemporary of the famous astronomer Copernicus. Paracelsus is considered the father of toxicology, and his ideas contributed to the development of modern chemistry. He was also an ardent supporter of magic and the esoteric arts, which led to his persecution by authorities. His works were influential in shaping the practice of witchcraft during the Renaissance period and beyond. Paracelsus believed that all illnesses and spiritual as well as physical causes. Paracelsus believed that all illness had spiritual as well as physical causes, and he explored the use of various natural substances to treat both the body and spirit. He promoted the idea of using sigils and talismans in medicine, drawing upon the power of symbols and intentions to heal patients. This approach resonated with the emerging practice of witchcraft, which emphasized the power of symbolism, and then that's it.
Power of symbolism. I don't know.
No, it's rather dry.
It's dry, but it's not inaccurate. And like I said, there's good historical information that it can draw on for sure. So.
Does it really speak to the influence, though?
You know, only it vaguely.
It speaks more about his history than it does the, you know, how he relates to witchcraft. In my estimation, I would have to say round two goes to Doc Murphy.
Oh, thanks. I would have to say that there's not enough discussion there about what witchcraft is in direct correspondences. I mean, we can be talking about folk magic generally, in which case some of the more, some of the more correspondent-y kind of stuff may or may not apply. Is it Wicca? Is it forms of, that probably would have been another paragraph, but if we let AI go, but there's some assumptions just kind of bled in there about what witchcraft entails, and I don't think that's well thought out. But the information on Paracelsus was very good, excellent. I'll give him that, but I'll definitely take your judgment.
All right. I actually grabbed a few of the other questions. I personally like, what is the difference between sorcery and blessing?
Oh. Okay. Should I go first? You want AI to go first?
Go for it. I'm putting it in now.
Okay. Well, it's a little bit of a way like comparing apples and oranges. They'd make a nice fruit salad, though. Sorcery is a magical technology. It is a way of doing magic. Sorcery is also one of those tricky words too, because it kind of addresses what magic actually is culturally. It's kind of an academic term for the kind of magic, high level magic that people do. Each of those cultures would have their own word for it, but sorcery is sort of a way of saying that this kind of magic that they're doing is sort of a high level. But it's a magical technology, and it's a category doing magic, whereas blessing is a specific act. It's an intentional act where the work being done is meant to be beneficial to somebody. It's meant to make something considered sacred and holy. So you're comparing, sorcery is a method and a category, and blessing is an action that actually has an intent. And so sorcery is how you do it, and blessing is what you're doing and why and what the results are. And so when you're blessing somebody, that's a specific action. Sorcery is a category of magic.
All right. So it is moving much faster now. I think we've got the machine woken up, and it should be because I'm paying for just this whole machine by itself. So it should be.
Oh, my.
Anyway, so it gave a concise answer this time, a complete thought. What is the difference between sorcery and blessing? This is a common question, and it's essential to understand the distinction between the two concepts. In essence, sorcery deals with the manipulation of energies or forces beyond our physical world, while blessing involved the granting of divine assistance or protection. Sorcery often carries negative connotations, but that's not always accurate. Some forms of sorcery may be neutral or even beneficial. Sorcery, the manipulation of energies or forces. Sorcery can involve a range of practices, including, but not limited to, divination, spell casting, summoning entities such as spirits, demons, or other beings, and using talismans or amulets. The key idea behind sorcery is the practitioner's practitioners harness and manipulate energies or forces beyond the physical realm to achieve their desired outcomes. This can be done for various purposes, such as gaining knowledge, altering reality, or affecting the lives of others.
Hmm. I don't agree.
I kind of am there with Doc Murphy on this. It seems to have lumped a lot more into it than really than fits. You know, it's kind of square peg round hole to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, it also makes the inaccurate. That's inaccurate. You can bless somebody without it being with the intercession of divine intervention, depending on, you know, the cultural lenses that you're looking through in those actions. Likewise, sorcery can have any intent behind it. Sorcery is a way of doing things. Blessing, it doesn't matter how you bless, as long as the intent is there to bless. It may involve God. It may involve entities, or it may involve, you know, just the blessing of your friends. That one sounds like it was also starting to kind of regurgitate I heard similar phrases and turns talking about sorcery that we heard with the description of magic earlier, so it's already starting to revisit material. Fascinating.
Very intriguing. Very intriguing. Wondering where this is going to go.
I'm wondering if we can find something, a question about metaphysics and magic in the occult that's squishy. You know,
do we want to increase the word count here a little bit since it's moving much faster?
Sure.
Why don't we
talk it up? Go ahead.
How about, are there moral constraints to arcane techniques?
Are there moral constraints to arcane techniques? Well, that's a really vague question, which might be a reason to give it to AI. But my response, of course, naturally is, okay, what kinds of techniques? Arcane by what historical standards and by what cultural standards? Do you still hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I heard a funny sound out of my phone, and I was like, "Yeah, I hung up." Just AI, I'm gonna get you, AI. Are there moral constraints based on what sorts of techniques, what sorts of morals, what cultural lenses are you looking through? It's a vague question, so I'm already kind of running. I'm in my head running through my students of like, okay, when you talk about moral constraints on arcane techniques, What do you mean by arcane? What techniques are you talking about? And when you're talking about moral constraints, are we talking about religious constraints? So already I'm kind of picking the question apart right now to make sure that it's clearer before I ask it. And I don't know if Mr. AI is going to do it. You know, just even adding another word in there, like, you know, are there moral constraints to arcane necromantic techniques? Okay, that specifies it right there for me, but that's not in that question. So I'm kind of, if we leave it vague like that, what does AI say?
I upped it to 300, so let's run that real quick. And
okay.
It's spitting it out in just a moment. Okay. The short answer is yes. The long answer is there are always moral constraints to any action we take, and arcane techniques are no exception. However, what sets arcane techniques apart from other actions is that their effects may not be immediately apparent. Art, you're really getting loud when I speak, so if you don't mind, could you mute, please? Which can lead to unintentional consequences on both the caster and those around them. As a master of the esoteric and occult, where individuals have attempted to use arcane techniques without understanding the full implication of their actions. This can result in unforeseen harm to themselves or others, as well as unintended consequences that can spread wider than expected. To prevent such situations, it's crucial to consider certain moral constraints while engaging in arcane techniques, One, respect for the balance. The natural order of things is a delicate balance between various forces. Manipulating these forces through arcane techniques should be done with care, ensuring that the balance is not disturbed excessively. This includes considering the potential impact of one's actions on the environment, other beings, and oneself. 2, self-awareness and reflection. Before utilizing arcane techniques, one must be aware of their own intentions, desires, and emotions. Engaging in such practices with impure intentions or a weak will can lead to disastrous outcomes. It's essential to reflect on one's motivations and ensure they...
That is the most verbose, vague answer I think I've ever heard. I'm learning a valuable lesson in how not to write a book about the occult. Like, it was, you know, I think it's my years of correcting papers for students too. There's a lot of repetition in that response, but also a lot of assumption that, well, you know what these terms mean, right? And I want more specificity before I'd answer.
Yeah, it seemed like it was very kind of all over the board a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I James posted the transcription in here, and I just, you know, the natural order of things is a delicate balance between various forces. I mean, come on, just get to it. People use forces through arcane techniques should be done with care. I think a question this is an example too of where critical engagement is going to win out over just kind of aggregating information, is because, you know, I'm sitting with this text or even with the question and going, there needs to be more specificity. There needs to be more, don't assume your audience knows what you're talking about. The AI just kind of went ahead and again, there's a lot of redundancy in that answer. Me criticizing the writing too, but who's arcane techniques? What are you talking about? And when you know, so there's a lot of generalities in the answer, maybe because of the generalities in the question.
You know, a question kind of just popped into my mind, more around. Well, I'll just pose the question. You know, is spell work stronger than free will?
Oh, let's throw it in the middle of the ring here.
Okay, let's see. Well, is spell work stronger than free will, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let me put a hyphen in there so I'm Okay, so let's run it.
Let's see what
do we
want to
hear
is.
It out. Let's see what the AI says first.
Yeah,
okay.
let's give AI the first shot this time.
Here it goes. For the purpose of this discussion, let us assume that everyone has a free will and that it is indeed possible to use our own free will to resist or counteract spellwork. Firstly, let us discuss what spellwork entails. Spellwork is a manipulation of energies or forces within the universe to bring about a desired effect. This can be done through various means, such as rituals, incantations, sigils, etc. Essentially, the practitioner uses their intention and focus of the energies around them in order to influence the world around them. Okay, now, the question at hand is spellwork stronger than free will? To answer this question, we must consider the following points. One, the role of intention and focus in spellwork. In order to perform any form of spellwork, one must have a clear intention and a sharp focus. Intention fuels the power of the spell, and focus keeps the energies moving in the desired direction. Without intention and focus, spellwork becomes impossible, as there would be no force directing the energies. The impact of belief on spellwork, number two. Belief plays a crucial role in the effectiveness of spellwork. The practitioner's belief in their own abilities and in the existence of the energies they are trying to manipulate can either amplify or diminish the power of their spell. Strong belief, dot, dot, dot. I don't feel like it really answered the question.
Kind of mortality.
No. And belief, not believing means it won't work.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
that feels very Hollywood kind of pop culture aggregation to me.
Yeah. And it also assumes that this reply also assumes that the intention behind spellwork and free will are somehow different. You know, my immediate thought was there's this assumption that, you know, if you cast a spell over somebody, then you're messing with their free will, right? I'm going to make Skippy fall in love with me. And that's unethical to do because it's messing with his free will. And really it's not that simple. You also make choices and need your free will in order to design and create and do spell work, but also, we're not as free willing as we, as we all are. I don't think you can pull those two things apart that easily. But again, the belief thing is the kind of linchpin there. I remember asking about when you're doing spell work and if you just kind of can't keep focused on a spell that you're doing, it's taking some time and you're kind of losing energy or you're wrecking the spell because you don't have that energy. And this was still fairly new to hoodoo. And I remember getting a lovely response from Miss Michael, who said, "Nope, it's all there." He said that first intention, when you have those, the signatures of those ingredients, and that candle, that burst and that prayer, when you get started, that's always there. Even if 3 days later you're feeling glum and you're feeling depressed and wondering if it's going to work, then the language of magic that you're using is speaking to the spirits and it's still working, even if you don't feel like you're believing it right now. So I, ever since getting that bit of wisdom from Miss Michael, I've had a different relationship with magic and with belief. But yeah, it does seem to assume that there's this dichotomy between spell work and free will, and when really you can't have one, you really can't perform one without the other, and you can't assume that the target of your spell work is somehow successfully using their free will to resist it, or lacking in free will if they are affected by it. That's irrelevant, you know. That's where I'll put it. Is that Yeah, I'll stop there.
So we have about 20 more minutes. And I think that we should use the AI for what people would use it for in the wild. So I think we should start asking it questions like, how would you set up an altar to Bridget in the Celtic tradition? Or how would you create a spell to draw a loved one in the hoodoo tradition? Something along those lines. What
right.
do you guys think?
Let's do it. Let's do how-tos. That would be fun.
All right. Which one do y'all want to do better? Do you have an idea or a suggestion? I'm gonna up the character breaking up for 500.
You're crickledy crackleding again. I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Oh, sorry. I upped the character limit just a little bit, just to give it a little bit more room to, you know, speak a little bit, because you know it might go through an ingredients list and not actually get to what it's doing.
Ah, good point. Okay. Phil is in the chat says, I think any mention of Miss Michael is an automatic win. Not with you there. I love Miss Michael. All right. Well, I mean, do we want to fish in the chat for a really basic question, or do you guys have one that you want to?
I think Reverend James posed a couple really good ones right off the top.
Okay. Well, then I'll go with the how to draw a new lover in the hoodoo tradition. And then if anybody in the chat or out there in the airwaves has any other suggestions, they can throw those in while we're doing this one.
Okay. Well, I'll go ahead and jump. In the hoodoo tradition, there are lots of great love spells to draw a new lover to you. One that I would do would be to create a mojo. You would need a red flannel bag and several herbal and zoological ingredients whose signatures are about drawing love. So personally, I would add love drawing herbs such as cubeb berries and rose petals, cherry bark, lovage. Oh, what else should we throw in there? Catnip would be good. Maybe a little Damiana, just to make it a little bit spicy. And also to fold in a prayer paper. The prayer paper is usually made traditionally with a shopping bag paper or some other kind of brown paper, the pure paper, a Miss Katz teacher is kind of referred to. And then while writing your name on it and your desire for love and a petition to please bring me into my future husband or the love of my life or my beloved, also write on the other side of the paper a small verse from the Song of Solomon. The grimoire of hoodoo is the Bible. So what I would do is I would pick a section from the Song of Solomon, something like, awaken, O north wind, and come, O south wind, blow across my garden, let its spices flow, let my beloved come to his garden and eat his choicest fruits. Write that on the prayer paper, dress it with your own sexual juices, dress it with come to me oil, dress all the ingredients with the come to me oil, and put a little bit of yourself in there, maybe a hair or a fingernail in there for yourself. Tie everything up nice and tight. Smoke it over incense. Well, before you tie it up tight, breathe into it. I forgot about that step. Then smoke it over incense, and when it jumps to life, it is a living mojo. Give it a name, and then keep that mojo hidden from everybody's prying eyes on your person 3 days against your skin, and then just carry it in your pocket or your purse or every place else, and it will do the work of drawing love to you. I'll look for signs in 3 days. Movement in 3 weeks, and a resolution in 3 months.
Nice. I like that one. And it's kind of interesting because Trismegist just kind of went in the same direction. I prompted, create a spell to draw a new lover in the hoodoo tradition. And it kind of assumes a little bit to begin with. The first part of the output is, I need the spell to be powerful and effective, but not overly aggressive or manipulative. So I don't remember saying that, but it seems to think that I wanted that. And it says, what do you suggest? It goes on to say, to create a powerful and effective spell to draw a new lover in the hoodoo tradition, we must combine various elements that resonate with love and attraction. The spell can include candles, herbs, essential oils, sigils or symbols, and a charm bag or bottle. Follow the steps below to create this powerful and influential spell. 1. Choose your container. You can use a small cloth bag or a glass bottle as your charm container. If using a bag, it should be large enough to hold the herbs, oil, and other items. If using a bottle, make sure it's a dark colored and has a good sealing cap. 2. Select your symbols. In hoodoo, symbols and sigils are used to represent our intentions and desires. Draw or paint a symbol for love and attraction on a piece of paper or on the inside of the bag or bottle, if possible. This can be a simple heart design or an intricate sigil crafted specifically for your purpose. 3. Gather your materials. You will need the following items for the spell. 1. A green or red candle. Green represents love and abundance, while red signifies passion and desire. Rosemary, herb for love and attraction. Cinnamon, herb for warmth and passion. Essential oil of rose or jasmine for love and sensuality. A small piece of paper or cloth for the sigil. A small cord or ribbon to tie the charm bag or bottle. 4. Prepare the space. Cleanse your work area and the ingredients with purifying incense or by sprinkling salt water. Cast a protective circle around your workspace to prevent any negative energies from interfering with your spell. 5. Create the spell. Create a protective circle.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Number 5. We're almost to the end. Create the spell. Light the candle, naming the candle with a name that embodies the type or of relationship you desire. Example, my divine connection or my loving partner. As the candle burns, add the rosemary and cinnamon to the bag or bottle. Pour a few drops of rose or jasmine essential oil into the bag or bottle directly onto the candle wax or on the sigil paper. And that is where it stopped. 500 characters.
Well, the reason I kind of went, when we was because there is no casting of protective circles in hoodoo. Got that one wrong. Casting of protective circles is in Western magic. It's in Wicca. It's in other cultural traditions. It is not a step done in hoodoo. So that's a whoopsie. That's an inaccuracy. I can't say that, like I said, it's again, we're back to this. It's not so much that the work is protective circle nonetheless. It's not that there's inaccuracies. It's just a lot of it's hedging its bets, I guess is the best way to put it. You can use a bag or a bottle, and it should be large enough to do this. And you wanted to collect ingredients that possibly could do this and this and that. I was like, okay, say what the ingredients are. You know, you can get a specific. You know, so I don't think it's like I
you mean
said,
it needs
like
to be more decisive.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it went around the internet and got a bunch of love spells and said, okay, let me put them all together and kind of cobble them into this spell. Or let me throw in this thing about casting a circle, and it'll sound. It's like, nope, that's not hoodoo. Yeah. So. Gotcha.
So do we have another question? Did anybody pop up anything? I haven't had a chance to look at the chat.
Let's see.
I'm sitting here talking on mute. Dr. Sweets actually posted an interesting flip side to this, is ask it to create a death spell in the Candoble tradition. Let's see if it will go evil and be somewhat accurate. Or a different tradition if can be substituted if it's something Doc Murphy can respond to.
Okay.
So what tradition do you think you could speak on, Doc Murphy, that would relate to having a death spell or something similar?
Death spells in, let's see, you definitely could speak to it in hoodoo, could speak to it in Western esoteric traditions or Western magic, Haitian voodoo, Santeria. Let me look again at my library here.
Let's do Santeria. I like that idea.
Okay. Yeah. And again, it'll be, you know, I have a chunk of academic background in that, but I'm certainly not going to speak from the perspective of a practitioner or an initiate. So I'm already stating that. So, Let's see. I'm already kind of going through the library in my head right now.
Write a death spell in the Santeria tradition. All right, let's see what it says. And it's thinking. And here goes. All right. Incorporating the principles of cause and effect and using the Santeria circle is the very first line. Not sure what that's speaking about. But in order to write a death spell in the Santeria tradition, we must first understand the fundamental concepts behind Santeria itself. Santeria is an African-Caribbean religion that combines elements of several indigenous African spiritual traditions, as well as Catholicism. Its practitioners are known as Santiados, and they use rituals, prayers, and herbs to heal, protect, and bring luck. The Santeria circle is one of the most important aspects of the religion. It is a sacred space created by the practitioner to perform rituals, and it represents both a protective barrier and a point of connection with the spirits. The circle is typically drawn on the ground or on a cloth with cornmeal, salt, or another suitable material. When creating the circle, the practitioner calls upon the four elemental powers, earth, air, fire, and water, and the five Santos de la Mesma Energia, the five saints of the same energy, to provide balance, protection, and guidance. Now, let's proceed with writing the death spell. One, begin by drawing the Santeria circle as described above, calling upon the elemental powers and the Santos de la Mesma Energia. Within the circle, create a smaller circle, which will serve as the graveyard of the spirit world. To do this, sprinkle some more of the salt, cornmeal, or other suitable material in a smaller area within the circle. Next, light a black candle at the center of the smaller circle to represent the fire element. As you light the candle, focus on the intent of the spell, the death of the target person. Around the candle, arrange symbols of death, decay, and endings. These can include bones, dried leaves, dead flowers, or any other items that symbolize death for you. Hold your focus on the target person and visualize their spirit being pulled into the graveyard of the spirit world. To help with this visualization, you may wish to use a picture or personal item of the target person. Now, chant the following incantation three times. Agiel, Agiel, Santos de la Mesma Energia. And that's all it has.
Oh, my head hurts. My head is hurting. I'm not going to lie. There's terms that it's using in its description that I've never heard of. I want to call my advisor, Patrick Bellegarde Smith, who's a IFA practitioner, and go. This also isn't a spell. This is a ritual. I gotta admit, I'm stumped on this one. Some of the terms, like I said, I've not heard of. It doesn't mean that they don't exist. But also, the descriptions of spell work as opposed to ritual work in Santeria that I've encountered are infinitely more private. They are the sort of thing that you would go to see a Santero or a Mambo of a particular who is a devotee of a very particular death related saint, Orisha. And it's a private matter. It's not the kind of thing that you would really do. I don't know. I'm going to opt out of this one. I'm going to give this one to AI only because my Santeria history is a little bit rusty at this point. So I'll just go ahead and give this one to AI. But it doesn't sound like like I said, through my studies and through my research, it doesn't sound like anything particularly familiar to me. It's feeling a little It's feeling a little pieced together. There's some coherency missing, but at the same time, I don't have a better answer right now, and I'll just go ahead and admit that. So we'll give this one to AI.
Well, we have a few more minutes, like two, so I want to do one more really quick one. So what I want to do is something very, very specific. So maybe something like provide a psalm for drawing money and see if it can provide one. What do you think?
Sure. And I provide 23. Psalm 23.
All right. It's thinking. It's going to spit out 500 characters, but still, let's see what it has to say. May not read all of it. All right. It has spit out Psalm 69:8 and a prayer for guidance in business, Proverbs 3:5. The psalm asks God to pour out his blessings upon us and to be our guide in all endeavors. This prayer for guidance in business requests wisdom and discernment so that we may navigate.
We lost you again. We lost you again.
Sorry.
69:8.
69:8, a psalm for money. O Lord, do not deliver me in the desires of man, nor to the whims of those who seek to deceive me, for I have not sought their counsel, nor have I walked in their ways.
Well, I could give you the whole 23rd psalm if you want. I'm willing to call a draw with AI if we're talking about information gathering. I'm willing to call it to draw. I still would like to sit with it about more allegorical and more meaning-based questions. You know, things like, what does the Seals of Solomon mean to a contemporary practitioner? Or, you know, why, you know. I think there'd be a lot of interesting questions to return to. But I'll call this one a draw. I'll call this one a draw with AI.
Well, by my statistics, the ending results were 2 draws, 2 for AI, and 3 for Doc Murphy. But I don't think this is the last that we're going to hear from the occult AI. I have a feeling this is going to come around again. But that is all the time that we have left for today. You know, I hope everybody's enjoyed your time with us as always this evening. Until next time we meet, keep that magic alive. Take us out, Reverend James.
Thank you, Reverend Art. And thank you, Doc Murphy of RootDocMurphy.com and the Twin Cities of Paganistan for joining us this week. We invite you to join us next week when we will be joined by another outstanding guest. We've come to the end of this episode of Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, on the LMC Radio Network. You can find Reverend Art at FolkConjure.com and at FolkConjure on Facebook and Instagram, on the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com, on readersandrootworkers.com, and on Hoodoo Psychics. I'm your announcer, Reverend James, joining you from FolkConjure.com in North Carolina. Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places can be heard every week live on Blog Talk Radio at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and the shows are available in an archive via mysticsmages.com/radio show and on the Lucky Mojo Forum. For all of us at Mystics and Mages, I'd like to thank you for being here. Be sure to follow at Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places on Facebook and at Mystics, Mages, Magical Places on Instagram for updates and news. We'll be back next week at this same time. Come sit a spell. Wink, wink. Relax and enjoy the show. We've only just begun. Thanks, everybody. Good night.
And now for a brief announcement. You know her, you love her. She's a favorite here on Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, and I am proud to say that Doc Murphy and I are embarking on yet another project. We're going to be going live through Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places. It's growing. Stay tuned. Follow the Facebook page, follow the Instagram page, and be introduced to the Salon of Sacred Heresies. Good night, everybody.